This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the Trackhouse Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. I'm Jeremy Scott. A busy, busy show for you today. Lots of news has broken over the weekend. I'm going to touch on a little bit of it now. Driver analyst Charlie Ante will be joining me near the end of the show. We'll break it down just a little bit and what it means for you. So remember, you can always get us on Twitter at Inside Open Wheel. Find us on Facebook. Email us, insideopenwheel@gmail.com. Also, if you have any questions, leave us a voicemail. Maybe you might be able to hear it on the next episode or subsequent episodes. 815-714-9260. That's 815-714-9260. Well, starting off the top of the news, IndyCar has come out with a brand new schedule all around. Here's what's going on. So, Portland and WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca had both been canceled. If you remember, I believe WeatherTech Raceway was a doubleheader. Could be mistaken. But because of that, doubleheaders have not been announced for this weekend at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course at the Worldwide Technology Raceway following the Indianapolis 500 and the Harvest Grand Prix. Now, that weekend also doubles with the SRO Americas race, which has, you know, GT4, SRO World Challenge, et cetera, et cetera. So that one might be a little bit harder to tweak, but that was also supposed to be the 8 hours of the Americas, where everybody from SRO comes over and runs sporty cars around the road course of Indianapolis for 8 hours. I don't think that's going to happen, so that's going to work in IndyCar's favor. Now, what does this mean for the road to Indy? Well, we also found out immediately after that New Jersey Motorsports Park has been added to the road to Indy calendar. Lots of runoff there. I've been there before. It's a nice facility, close to the ocean over there in the southern part of New Jersey. Beautiful facility. Grand Am used to race there all the time. I believe AMA still races there. So lots of runoff for these guys to get out there. The last time the Indy Pro 2000, USF 2000 ran was a decade ago in 2010. Connor Daly, Sage Karam, Zach Veach, they were all there. And also include the Battery Tender Global MX5 Cup Series. They were also supposed to be on deck for the West Swing. I know the Road to Indy races are going to be a triple header. Not 100% sure if the MX5 races are going to be a triple header, but we're going to keep a close eye on that. We'll get Rob Howden on here after his long stretch. I believe he's gone 6 weekends, two of those being with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network and IndyCar Radio at Mid-Ohio. Speaking of Mid-Ohio, next couple days, if you're listening to this on release on Tuesday, if you're not, on Wednesday, it's the triple header at Mid-Ohio for Road to Indy in the middle of the week. Definitely download the Road to Indy TV app for that. So what's going to happen is we're going to have one race on Wednesday, two races on Thursday. So not 100% sure how this will be worked out. But we're going to keep an eye on things as Christian Rasmussen and Daniel Frost both lead their respective championships in Indy Pro 2000 and USF 2000. Also on deck for this weekend is FR America's F4 Championship Racing from Barber Motorsports Park. Beautiful Barber Motorsports Park in Leeds, Alabama. That's going to take place July 31st through August 2nd. Once again, you can watch that on fanracing.live. I'll be watching as much as I can. I know I've got a couple of races I got to call this weekend as well. But one sad news, it looks more and more like the United States Grand Prix will not happen at all. We know that F3, they were supposed to be support to the Formula One weekend, and doesn't look like the FR Americas is. They were supposed to be in Trois-Rivières next weekend as well, but that race has been canceled. So the F4 FR Americas, they're going to have a long break between races at Barber Moore Sports Park and Sebring International Raceway. Also, do have an update for you on the transgressions in Formula 4 that happened at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. We're going to talk to those with Charlie. Had some sources confirm what exactly happened to Christian Bogle, which is some little bit of interesting news. We will have more on that here a little bit later on in the show. Also joining us, the hottest driver in open wheel here in America is Linus Lundqvist. He races in FR Americas. He's won all five races. We're going to talk with him about his history and how racing in Formula 3, the British series, might have actually helped him to where he's at. A whole 125 points leading in FR Americas right now. Also, a good friend of mine from my sports card days, Michael Shank, will join us. He'll talk about his start in open wheel racing. It didn't actually start when he ran the Indianapolis 500 with Jack Harvey. We'll talk more on that a little bit later on. So, with that, going to let you go real quick, take a quick break. Coming up next, Linus Lundqvist, the hottest driver in North America. He's a Swede. And shouldn't come as a surprise, as the Swedes are pretty quick here in the United States. You're listening to Inside Open Wheel. The wait is over. Inside Open Wheel is now on Apple Podcasts. So no matter where you get your favorite podcast from, you can always get a new episode of Inside Open Wheel on that same program. Heck, you can even get a push notification right when we release new episodes. Once again, Inside Open Wheel, we're now on Apple Podcasts.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, if you follow open wheel racing or racing in general, you know about these names. Kenny Brack, Stefan Johansson, Ronnie Peterson, even Nick Janssen. And currently Marcus Ericsson and Felix Rosenqvist are really tearing up IndyCar, but there's another Swedish driver you should watch out for. And he comes in FR Americas. We've been talking about him the past several weeks. It's Linus Lundqvist. Linus, man, I've got to say, I mean, this is a weird start to the season, but nonetheless, 5-for-5 to begin the season, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, you're right. Firstly, you know, super nice to be here, so thank you for having me. And like you say, I mean, we've been having a really dream start to the season here in America, so yeah, super happy.
Well, and you got a great group behind you. You drive the number 26 Global Racing Group Ligier Honda. You are the FR Americas points leader, obviously, because nobody's finished ahead of you so far this season. But I did get a chance to sit down and watch some of your VIR races on fanracing.live, and I've got to say, in spite of all the pressure you had in all three races, you handled it well. Like, you've done this before, and looking back at your racing history, you know, you pretty much have had some stiff competition over the years.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I can't stress this point enough. You know, there's definitely a whole team behind this, and the work that my guys at Global Racing Group put in to give me a great card every weekend that we've showed up so far, it's been terrific. But like you say, I mean, the competition is really tough, especially when you consider there's almost half of the Indy Lights field that sort of joined our championship because they got cancelled. So that sort of was a bit of a last minute call from their side. But obviously it added a few cars to our championship, and it definitely toughened up the competition as well.
I was going to say, yeah, with the addition of the Indy Lights drivers, that has to be better for you, because it gives these teams that are looking to get back in Indy Lights next year in 2021 a look at what you can do, because you're going up against hot shoes like Santi Urrutia and David Malukas.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, some of the teams that have joined our championship as well, you know, we got the Andretti and the HMD guys, etc. So it's good to have them on board, but you know, it's an even better feeling when you can stand on the top of the podium knowing that these are the guys that you're racing against.
And not to mention too, what's nice is at the end of the year the champion gets, you know, a season long ride in Indy Lights, so that's got to be a great incentive with the Indy Lights teams there with you.
Yeah, for sure. And this is, again, a massive thank you to Honda for their initiative with this championship and for putting out the scholarship and making it possible for young drivers like myself to be able to progress through the ladders when you got an opportunity like that. So we're just trying to keep our head down and continue on this road, and hopefully by the end of the year we can stand as champions.
We'll touch on FR Americas, Honda, Ligier, all those here in just a couple of seconds. I want to go through your racing history a little bit. And I noticed in 2016 you swept the Formula STCC Nordic Championships, both Nordic and NEC Championships, quite dominating race in quite dominating fashion in trying to do math here in my head, which is pretty hard to do. In 17 races, you won 13 times, and finished on the podium almost all but once. That's a heck of a dominating season.
Yeah, you're right. And that was what was that so special about that season for me, because it's still a very fond memory, was that it was with a family team. So my stepdad was my mechanic, and his brother was my engineer. And then obviously my mom came to all the races as well and helped out with all the administrative stuff and stuff like that. So it was a really cool year, and it was the second year of us doing it as well. So we had a go at it in 2015, but obviously never running a racing team before, anything close to it, we we had quite a lot to learn. But then we did our homework for 2016 and we were able to win it. So it's a very fond memory that I still look back and think back, you know, just 4 years ago I was, you know, back there with a family team running in Sweden, and now here we are. So it's quite cool to think how far we've gotten in just a couple of years.
Now, our driver analyst, Charlie Ante, also runs a family team. He's the owner. His dad's a mechanic. So talk to us a little bit about the difficulties of going up against somebody who, you know, pays to go to a racing team, because, you know, that's where they want to be compared to a family-run team.
Yeah, I guess I'm not sure about the other situation, but in our situation, it meant like my stepdad still had a full-time job, and so did my mom. So every time that we got to spend on this was, you know, out of work hours and on the weekends and stuff like that. So it always seems that, you know, if you have a team that can dedicate this as a full-time job, they usually do a bit of a better job because they have more time, and maybe they're, you know, this is their career, whilst we sort of do it, you know, on the weekends and, you know, just for fun. But I think that's where you notice the difference. And that's the biggest difference that I noticed when in 2017, I took the step to British F4, and with Double R Racing, that you had 100% committed engineers and mechanics. And it was obviously a bit of a step up.
Now, Formula STCC Nordic, what kind of cars are these? You know, what formula, how do the race weekends look?
So they are basically, well, they are Formula Renault 1.6. So, and that was what the championship was called up until that year. Then it changed its name. But it's, yeah, the one of those cars with a sequential gearbox. So you had to use the heel and toe when you downshift. And yeah, it was a very basic single-seater car, but it learned you, I think, good enough to be able to take the step to F4 and maybe even directly to F3 if you wanted to after it. But it was a really good tool for myself because it was my first 2 years in single-seater and in cars. So it gave me a good baseline.
Well, and then you go over to the UK, run F4, a handful of F3 races. And correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't those races held in support of the British Touring Car Championship?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
Okay, so it's got to be, you know, busy because you have a lot of fans there. So was it different, going to the UK and probably seeing a lot more fans, you know, at the racetrack than you normally would on STCC weekend?
Yeah, for sure. It was incredible. I still remember, I think it was the first weekend we were at Brands Hatch, the opener. And like you say, we ran with BTCC. So I think the crowd across the 2 days were like 45,000 people.
Oh, wow.
Which is unbelievable. I mean, coming as from like racing in Sweden isn't that big. So coming from a relatively small racing scene into that was huge. And all of a sudden you were getting recognized by a few people in the paddock, and you wrote your first autograph and stuff like that. So it was very cool. But obviously the part that I really enjoyed was the on-track stuff and the racing, because my competitors were really fierce at the time, and I think we had a good scrap through the whole season.
You know, and I'm not discounting the racing action here in the United States, because it's equally as good, but it seems like when it comes to British racing, doesn't matter what category you're in, they're going to give you 10/10 100% of the time, whether it's practice, qualifying, or the race.
Yeah, you're right. And I guess, you got to say that UK is probably the home of motorsport,
right,
at least when you're speaking in European terms, which means that a lot of good drivers and teams are based or are trying to get to the UK to develop themselves, which is good, obviously, because that's the place where you want to be, with the toughest competition and where you can show yourself and trying to learn as much as possible. But it was definitely a cool year, and it took a while for me to learn all the tracks and get the hang of it as well, because it was quite a big step up from anything I've done previously. So,
Linus Wanquist, the FR Americas points leader in the 26 Global Racing Group Ligier Honda, joins us on Inside Open Wheel. 2019, you do some Euro Formula Open, and you take the Winter Series Championship, one win in two races. So at what point do you decide that you want to come to the States and try your hand at what then was F3, now FR Americas?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to lie. I mean, as a racing driver, you always keep an eye out on every possibility. And I think what really helped was when, or opened at least, my interests. It spiked it at least when Felix and Marcus came over to IndyCar, because it brought a lot of attention to the championship back in Sweden, which I guess in one term also helped a bit when you were speaking with sponsors and possible sponsors about, you know, about Americas, because then obviously they started to hear about it and picked up their interest on that side of it. So I guess it was a bit of a combination, because obviously, like you say, I ran the Euroformula Open Championship, and there was no secret that my target would be to do the FIA F3 Championship. But just looking budget-wise at it, it wouldn't be possible for us. So we started to look at different options, and then when Honda announced their scholarship at this championship, we got in touch with a couple of teams, and yeah, it was just too good an opportunity to turn down. And so far, I mean, I am so happy that I'm here, because right now I'm actually living in Indianapolis. So I got to say, I'm really enjoying life in America. And then obviously, inside is not going too bad either. So very happy about it.
I've got to say, Indianapolis is such a wonderful town. I get a chance to visit anytime I can, and you have so many options for entertainment, you know, stuff to do outside. So for a driver, it's, you know, it's a great place to be, you know, not just because it's the epicenter of American open wheel racing. Have you talked to, you know, Marcus or Felix since you've come to the States about what life is like in American open wheel racing?
Yeah, I do. We've actually been in touch, and yeah, I've been asking a bit about, you know, life here in Indy, but also trying to get a few tips and tricks around the tracks that we're going to, because obviously those are all new places for me. So yeah, I've been trying to get as much information as I can from them.
Well, when we see it help you at Mid-Ohio, because Felix did quite well last year, finishing second. They are headed there this coming weekend, and that's got to be one thing, is you're coming to a new series, you don't know the tracks, and then you end up actually dominating, in essence. So that's got to not only increase your that's got to increase the way you look at things with the series, but it's got to make you think, maybe I can make it here in the States.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I'm not gonna sit here and tell you that obviously when you win the first five races, obviously you start to think that, you know, this might actually be a good thing, you know, I can actually make this work, and you start to think about the championship. But on the other hand, I mean, we're 2 weekends in, we still don't know how long the championship is going to continue, but at least for another 3-4 rounds, and we know that everything can happen in motorsport. So I just try to keep my head down, do my job, one race at a time, and if I continue this way, I know that, well, hopefully that opportunities will come at the end of the day. So yeah, just down to my work, and then obviously trying to develop the car and myself as much as possible, because as it is my first year here in America, you want to try to learn as much as possible, because I'm thinking of having a career here. So everything I can gain on the tracks and stuff like that, it's just good for me.
All right, and let's talk about Barber. You guys are headed there. It's a wonder. I've never been there. I've seen video, I've seen pictures of there. It looks like a fantastic track. What are your thoughts going into this weekend? You're going to be paired with Radical Cup, so going to be a little bit different series, a little bit different compound. Talk us through that track.
Yeah, you're right. I've neither been there myself, so it's going to be a first one for me. Obviously, I've done a bit of time in it on the simulator back in Sweden, but I mean, from what I've heard, it's probably one of the most fun tracks in America. A lot of elevation, very high speed, which is cool. We like that. And apparently the facilities around it is great as well. So I'm really looking forward to it. I guess it will be the similar weekend to Mid-Ohio, because we're only going to have 2 practice sessions on the Friday, and then we jump straight into qualifying. So for myself, it's just going to be about, you know, doing as many laps as I possibly can on the Friday, gain as much experience, and then, you know, just tweak the car a bit for quali, and then just put the lap together and take it from there on. Because I think, as Mid-Ohio was as well, I mean, obviously we had a good, because we qualified in pole, won race one, won race two, but I felt I was just getting stronger as the weekend progressed. And I think it's going to be sort of the similar story here around Barber. You know, the more laps I can do, the quicker I'll be. So I'm looking forward to it. That's for sure.
Well, we're going to definitely have you on later in the season. But in the meantime, how can fans follow you on the different social media channels?
Yeah, so you can follow me on both Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And name is Linus Lundqvist, and that's Lundqvist with a Q-V-I-S-T. So like the, if you know hockey, Henrik Lundqvist, we have the same surname. So that's for Instagram and Facebook. And then Twitter is L_Lundqvist again. So yeah, I'll post the updates on there. And then obviously on my website or on Fan Live, you can follow the races because we have streaming, you know, for the races, which is great.
Yeah, that's fantastic that they've got streaming and the broadcast team. You know, I know that being someone who's worked with internet broadcasting in the earlier days, I know how difficult that can be. So really, I commend those guys for doing what they can. Linus, thanks for joining us. Good luck at Barber Motorsports Park.
Sweet. Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up next, Michael Shank talks about his foray into open wheel racing. We might talk some Daytona prototypes too, my second love. You're listening to Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, after some technical difficulties last week, we finally got the man on. He's someone that when I used to do Grand Am Unleashed with Tommy Brawlsbo and Rich Hall, we would lean on him a lot for a lot of help. And second to none, one of the greatest owners I think I've dealt with in Grand Am. And now he's in IndyCar, and I am so excited about it. Mike Shank, welcome to Inside Open Wheel. How you been?
And I've been great, and I'm glad to be on with you. I'm sorry we had the little technical glitches last week, but here to talk IndyCar.
You know what? And that's technology for you. Want to start off with something, because I actually, you might know this name from way back. I talked to our tech director at the Audubon Country Club, Joe Griffin. May ring a bell. He was a little shocked. He goes, wait a second, Shank, how do you know Mike Shank? So, yeah, and of course, we bring that up because you actually came up through the Atlantic ranks.
He was an official at Toyota Atlantic with Vicky O'Connor, and I spent from 95 through 2002 in the Toyota Atlantic series.
And you also brought up some drivers as well who ended up becoming Indy 500 champions in that competitive, from the competitive Atlantic series, I should say.
Yeah, we had probably most notable was Sam Hornish. We ran in 99. We also ran a Canadian guy named Kenny Weldon, who almost won the championship for us. We had a lot of interesting people over the years. An Argentinian named Martin Basso, who was really, really good. Rodolfo Lavin in the Corona beer car. And, you know, we've had some characters and really good people over the years.
Well, of course, you also had some characters in your Daytona prototype, one of those being a driver who actually did find some success in the Indy 500, a good friend of yours, A.J. Allmendinger, also Justin Wilson, paired with you in some Rolex 24 races. You've had success in sports cars, but when the what is now known as the DW12 first came out, you started with MSR Indy to possibly make the jump as early as 2012.
Yeah, you know, we had we really wanted to get back to, you know, I've always wanted to do IndyCar, and my route, you know, was all open wheel until, you know, basically the separation of CART and IRL in 96. Eventually it caught up to us in the feeder series, and we just couldn't stay in Toyota Atlantic anymore, so we went sports car racing, and I'm grateful that we did, because it really changed our life. And the sports car program only started taking off in 06 and 07 and 08, and we decided to stick our toe back in the IndyCar when they did a reset on the cars. And we tried to do something in 2012, and it just didn't work. And that's a whole story to itself. But we ended up selling that car to Sam Schmidt, ironically. But myself and my wife and Brian Bailey, a local businessman in Central Ohio, tried to get it done, just couldn't make it happen then.
And you actually ended up coming to IndyCar, you started off, you just sold that car to Sam Schmidt. Came back in 2017 with a young driver by the name of Jack Harvey, who found some success at Indianapolis himself. And you partnered with the team that you're with now, Andretti Autosport. What was that first experience like being back in the open wheel ranks?
It was really cool. That 2017 was a deal that, you know, originally Stephen Wilson had come to me to ask us to run him at the 500 with Andretti. They didn't have enough people to run him, so we did a deal to run Stephen Wilson, actually. And lo and behold, here comes Fernando Alonso to Andretti's, and that just shifted the whole ecosystem. And that shift basically led to where we are today, to be honest with you, because it also led to my future partner in Jim Meyer, and that is now Meyer Shank Racing. I met him all through that 2017 deal with Sirius XM. So a lot of good has come out of Fernando Alonso.
And let's talk about that deal, because it seems like Jim Meyer is huge into racing. You see a lot of people who think, okay, yeah, they're big, but Meyer just seems to be into, you know, getting the car up near the front, and not only an IndyCar, but also on your sports car side as well.
Yeah, you know, he didn't know anything about sports car, to be honest. He's a diehard Indianapolis 500 guy for 35 years. He has a home in Indianapolis, and it's his hub that he works out of. I brought him up to kind of speed on the sports car program, which is a vital, vital part to what we do here in our relationship with Acura and Honda and HPD, which also extends to IndyCar, obviously, too. So he certainly fully appreciates it now, and has been to several Daytona 24s and comes to as many as he can. And he's just a great guy. You know, he's older than me a little bit, but, you know, we're all Midwest cut people, you know, and I think have similar mentalities about lots of things. And he and I just happened to, and my wife actually too, we all just hit it off really well together. And it was a breath of fresh air for our business, and certainly another person that allowed me to learn more of on the business side of things. And I've done nothing but learn from him.
2018, 2019, you end up with Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports, which last season turned into Arrow Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports. How was that with that transition from Andretti all the way over to Schmidt-Peterson?
You know, it's really interesting. We've been with two really good groups at this point now, and they just do, you know, it's funny. The cars are exactly the same. You know, the physical part of the car has to be the same, but there's so many detail things that they do differently. After a while, they add up to be a different driving race car. And the communication and everything is very similar. I had a great experience at Sam's. I have nothing to complain about at all. And it certainly helped us getting going and have good friends over there still to this day. Andretti's is good, different, but good. And, you know, no complaints. And if you're watching closely this year, you'll see that 80% of the time Jack is in the kind of top three typically of the Andretti cars performance wise on the track. We haven't necessarily got all the results yet, but we have run well and run fast. And I attribute that to their technical status and the folks that, you know, help us from there. It works well, actually.
Michael Shank joins us on Inside Open Wheel, talking about his move from sports cars into open wheel. We're going to kind of preview Mid-Ohio here in just a little bit, but I want to get back to last year. Last year, you and I were talking on IndyCar Radio, and I tried to pry it out of you what was going to happen this season, if there would be more races, a full season, because, you know, rumors were all about at this point, where you were going, how many races. You know, we knew Jack Harvey was staying with you, but at what point last season was the final determination that, okay, we're going to go full in and we're going to go here for the 2020 season?
You know, that started coming together in September of last year, I would say. September, I would say. Maybe late August, but it was a difficult choice. There's a couple teams that we were talking to. Really, ultimately, we got along well with Andretti's in the first time in 2017. We have a common sponsor in Auto Nation, and really that drove a lot of this ship. We knew technically they were good. That wasn't a question. it was, we have this common denominator in AutoNation, and it made life for AutoNation easier. And if that's what it takes to make their life easier, I'm all in. And that's, you know, that was pretty simple from there.
And you're talking about the results not being there, but I tell you what, Jack's been fast this year. It's great to see him up near the front of qualifying. And when you have somebody like Will Power that comes up and says, that's the guy that I'm worried about taking the pole for me, you know you've got a hot shoe behind the wheel.
Yes. and, it, you know, well, I mean, yeah, it's very true. And Jack's just really, you know, we've done these limited amount of races, so he kind of parachutes into these very intense situations and has to come up to speed. Well, conversely, this year he's racing every time they're racing, so his kind of learning curve and knowing what he needs out of the car is just going, you know getting better and better and quicker, right? Just, you know, tell, you know, car's doing X, tells the engineer X, that the engineer changes the car. That kind of cadence has become better and better, and we haven't peaked yet. I really believe firmly in what he's capable of and what our engineer's capable of. I think we can challenge for more top six qualies, fast six qualies. And obviously we want to finish in the top five in the race. And that's our goal. And you could arguably say we should have had five top fives already with the way we've run out of six races. There's a case to be made there. And I'm proud of that. It just hasn't really happened to us yet. But it's going to.
Well, and take a look at Iowa, a difficult track for quote-unquote rookies of that facility to master, and you've got Jack Harvey with a pair of sevens, you know, in back-to-back races with the heat. You know, that's fantastic for him.
Yeah, listen, you know, Jack had been there once in 2015 in the Indy Light car. It's a lot different place in an Indy car around that place, 18-second laps, you know. And, you know, Jack, I mean, I was just super happy. Jack adapted really well. We did a 90-minute practice, and which is all chopped up, and you know, but he stayed in the car the whole time, and then took a break, jumped out, and then we went to write the quali. And then between quali and between practice and quali, he got with the engineer, talked to some other drivers within Andretti's, and then quali just went out there and just killed it. You know, it really surprised me that he got kind of things figured out that quickly. In the race, you know, in the first race there, we were in position with 30 laps to go. We were P4, and I thought, oh, this is awesome, you know. And then in the second race, we positioned fifth or sixth with 20 laps to go. And that's all as a team we can do, you know. So Andy was the highest, pretty much the quickest Andretti car all weekend, and certainly finished the highest. So consistently anyway. So we're proud of all that. And I think we, you know, indicates a direction that we're capable of.
And this weekend, surprise doubleheader as announced on Monday at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course, home track for Honda, home track for you. So it's kind of nice to get double the races and you don't really have to leave your bed too much.
Nope. I'll be staying at home that night. But, you know, IndyCar's got this new deal, and I happen to really like it. They've got these what I call compacted weekends where, you know, we're going to roll in there Friday, unload, and Saturday practice qualify race, and then Sunday qualify race. And it's a little hard on the team and the drivers, to be honest. But, you know, we've got a very, very good, capable, organized team that has the car ready and a spare car ready and spare parts ready. So if anything goes wrong, we can react fairly quick anyways. On top of that, you know, we finished 10th there last year and ran in the top 10 the whole time, qualified 7th or 10th. I can't remember actually. So, if we get a car that was kind of as hooked up as the car was at Road America and Indy Grand Prix at Mid Ohio, we think we should be able to get close to that top six again. If you put these perfect laps together, and get to do it twice.
And we get one of those long stretches once again. You have the doubleheader at Mid-Ohio, go right into Indy 500 practice. Qualifying, Indy 500, doubleheader at Worldwide Technology Raceway, and then a month off. So, obviously, with the age of COVID-19, so, you know, things are changing rapidly. How are you as a team owner adjusting to this and, you know, helping the crews out by, you know, how are you helping the crews out basically with this tight schedule?
Well, that's the only thing we can do to help them is, well, we do. Actually, that's a good question. First of all, we lead by get an organized schedule together and have objectives that we want to hit every day or every week before we go and do all this, right? So the other thing we do too is when the IMSA guys are caught up on the IMSA stuff, which they have been, they come over and help the IndyCar guys, whether it's crack checking or whatever it may be. The IMSA guys will come over and help support the IndyCar guys when we're in these kind of cranked up IndyCar times. So, that's how this place operates, and everyone's got to be willing to do a little something for everybody, and it works out pretty good.
Now, how much crossover are you going to have going into Indianapolis? I know this weekend your sports cars are going to Road America for their race up there. How much tighter is the IMSA schedule basically between IndyCar and IMSA, and can you have some crews come over and maybe just help in the garage so that way if something does happen on the track, they're ready to go?
Yeah. I mean, we certainly have that option if we had a problem on the IndyCar side, but fortunately the IMSA schedule has been kind of one race a month, more or less, until we get to September and October. So they're spread out, and of course we race longer. We race into November with the sports cars now this year. So, IndyCar's busier at the front part, IndyCar's busier at the back part, so they kind of can work well together.
All right, and the big question of the day, when are you going to two cars IndyCar size?
Man, we're just getting the one going. I don't know. It would be, we're working on it, and maybe we can talk about that later on, but we'd like to do that at some point. But we're going to approach that just like we approach the primary car right now. And very measured, very on purpose, only doing it if we can afford to do it. That mentality that took us 2018-6, 2019-10, and now full season, that's the trajectory that really works for us. And makes it so that we can hit realistic goals, I think, and keep expectations in check.
Well, Michael Shank, owner of Meyer Shank Racing, thanks for joining us. I know you're set for a busy weekend. I guess you're going to be, trying to follow IMSA from the timing stand. So good luck this weekend.
I appreciate that. Thanks for having me.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, driving analyst Charlie Ante joins us. We're going to preview the weekend at Mid-Ohio and at the Barber Motorsports Park. The wait is over. Inside Open Wheel is now on Apple Podcasts. So no matter where you get your favorite podcast from, you can always get a new episode of Inside Open Wheel on that same program. Heck, you can even get a push notification right when we release new episodes. Once again, Inside Open Wheel, we're now on Apple Podcasts.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Oh boy, do we have a lot to talk about. And joining me is our driver analyst, Charlie Ante. And let's see here. We've got Road to Indy, 5 races and I think 11 days. IndyCar has a surprise doubleheader. Then they go to practice for the 500. Then they go race the 500. Then they got another doubleheader at Worldwide Technology Raceway. Thankfully, FR America's F4 has a normal weekend this weekend. So that's not too bad.
Yeah, it's going to be a busy month.
I always love the month of May, but I will say this: I think I may like this a little bit better because it's going to keep us just a little bit busier, which is a good thing. Want to let you know that later on this month we are going to have. Oh, obviously we're going to have Nicky Ullman from the IndyCar Radio Network. We're also going to work on getting Mark Janes, the voice of the Indianapolis 500, on. We're going to talk about Indy 500 basically most of the month of May. I'm trying to work on a couple other things. We'll see how those go along, but it's going to be a huge month of August here and Inside Open Wheel. All right,
while we're on that, I have a quick question. Is the schedule for the Indy 500 for the whole, are they just sort of copying and pasting the month of May into August, or did they make schedule changes as well?
Somebody posted it. Let me pull that up real quick, but I saw the article. I'm like, oh, I should probably look at that, and I did not. But I have a feeling that they are going to – it's just a copy-paste. Okay, so this is from Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and I would imagine they're going to give these guys a day. Okay, so they're going to give them a day to come from Mid-Ohio to the track, practice Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday with Fast Friday on – oh, come on. Okay, so we're going to do it this way. with Fast Friday on the 14th. Then they're going to go into the qualifying days. Right now, there are 30 confirmed entries for the 500. Going to see if there's going to be more. I have a feeling that Roger Penske's not going to go into his first Indy 500 as track owner and not have 33 entries. There's just no way.
That would be really bad.
Somebody is going to have a... somebody's... There we go. Oh, geez. Okay. So, let's see here. I have to click all the way over. All right. So, we have the practice days we just mentioned. Qualifying on Saturday and Sunday, and then there's you know how they have like usually the practice seats like the Monday or Tuesday after qualifying, that has been eliminated. So we go from qualifying straight to Carb Day on Friday, Legends Day, and then the Indianapolis 500 presented by Gainbridge, the 104th running, is August 23rd Sunday. So, looking at the race day schedule for that, let's see if I can get that up. Oh, wow, they're opening the gates at 8. Usually, well, of course, obviously, it's a later start. It's a 2:30 p.m. Eastern start, but a little surprised they're opening the gates up that, well, it's a different time.
They're going to have a smaller capacity, too.
Yes, and we're going to go over that real quick. So, last week, IMS, Roger Penske, and IndyCar all announced what's going to happen here with the protocol for the Indianapolis 500. They did get it confirmed by Marion County officials and Indiana health officials as well. So here's the long short of it. 25% venue capacity. Everybody will be screened as they come in with a contactless thermometer. If your temperature reads over, I think 100.4, you're going to be taken to a secondary screening. That's where they'll give you the proper COVID testing with a paramedic. All individuals inside the gates of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway will be required to wear masks, except if you're eating or drinking something. Now, you will also be given a complimentary mask and a hand sanitizer. Social distancing will be required. There will be cleaning and sanitization of all high-impact areas, so like bathrooms, cashier stations over at the gift shops. Those will be cleaned frequently throughout the day. Access to garages, pits, and other operational areas will be reduced and enforced. From what I understood from the announcement, before the announcement, if you bought your bronze badge, you're good. Afterwards, you're pretty much SOL. All tickets, I'm not sure if all tickets have been sold, but they did stop ticket sales as of last Friday. Indoor locations will be minimized for concessions and merchandise, distancing enforced in queues, and touchless transactions encouraged wherever possible. And fans and stakeholders will receive frequent advanced communications outlining policies and procedures. And obviously, this is going to be given across the PA, left and right. You can find the event plan guide on the Indianapolis Motor Speedway website. So it looks like that it's well thought out. Going to be interesting because we still have about 3 weeks left to go before we get into the 104th mm-hmm. running of the Indianapolis 500.
I just want to point out, did you mention that if someone has a 104 degree temperature that they're going to be taken to a secondary unit?
100.4.
100. Okay, I was just going to say, for some reason, I thought, like, the idea of going to an IndyCar race with 104 degree temperature, like, I mean, COVID or not, what are you thinking?
Exactly, yeah.
So, okay, that's still, 100 degree fever is a little better, but anyways, I just thought I would point that out.
Yeah, so... Yeah, it's a little different, but I applaud Roger Penske and the Penske Entertainment Group for going ahead, getting what looks like a well thought out plan, and presenting it to the City County Council of Indianapolis and the state of Indiana. Again, it looks great on paper. How it will be executed is one different story. You and I have been there enough to know the yellow shirts will be all on top of that, like flies on crap.
You know what? I definitely said an unkind thing or two about them in the past, but hopefully this time their sternness will be for a good reason.
I don't disagree. I mean, because I'm even seeing tweets, you know, for normal, you know, like everyday things. I'll admit, I went to go. My sister is a hairdresser, so I went into the salon for the first time since February to get my hair cut. And, you know, they have proper protocols. And I will say this, we want this to go off without a hitch. We want the rest of the season to go off without a hitch. But it won't if you don't wear a mask. That's the thing. The more people wear masks, the easier it's going to be to finish the season.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I'm just looking at the COVID numbers for Indiana.
It's not good. I can tell you that.
This is from Google. It's on July 23rd. It peaked at 999 new cases. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, July 27th, was 809 new cases.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what the population of Indiana is.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next couple weeks. Like I said, I want this to go off because this is like my, you know, it's our Christmas. We want to see it happen. Mm. But at the same time, we want it to be done safely. All right. So I mentioned earlier on in the show that we had some information from a source, a very reliable source, about the Christian Bogle, Jay Howard, not running the rest of the Christian Bogle, not running the rest of the F4 championship. Now, if you missed last week's show, here is the story. So we found out from our friends at FanRacing.live that Christian Bogle withdrew the rest of the season for Formula 4 championship to focus on the USF 2000 championship. Okay. So what we also found out, it sounded like it may have been a problem with a technical infraction, and it turns out that it was a technical infraction because both of Christian Bogle's wins were vacated, and Hunter Yaney, and I forgot who else off the top of my head, took those wins at Mid-Ohio. If you remember, race one, though, does not count because under FIA rules, if the race is run fully under safety car, nobody gets the win. Jay Howard got back to me and said, no, he's just going to focus on this season, the USF 2000 season, not a big deal. My source told me that either almost every Jay Howard car or every Jay Howard car failed tech at Mid-Ohio. It was a huge technical infraction, a huge fine from what I heard in terms of ladder series racing. And... Mm-hmm. Haven't confirmed this yet, but we are also hearing that Nolan Siegel will be doing the same thing that his teammates doing, that Bogle's doing, and leaving F4 to go focus on USF 2000. So,
with both still with Jay Howard.
Yes, both still with Jay Howard. However,
okay,
we're not sure. We haven't heard what the technical infraction is. We've reached out to our friends at SCCA Pro Racing. We've tried to get a clarification from Jay Howard. We've not heard from anybody yet, and that's understandable. You know, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to hear from people when it comes to something like this. Mm-hmm. But was there something on the Jay Howard car? Was there an error in the tech inspection? There's a lot of questions that can be answered. I have a feeling we're going to find out more, but kind of interesting to see two drivers jump ship from one champ, you know, running two championships to solely focusing on one championship.
Yeah, I mean, I think there could be a lot of things going on there. Obviously, they're still happy with the team, or they still have a contract that they can't get out of if they're running in the other series with the same team. But if I were the road to any technical scrutineers, I would be taking a very good look at those cars.
Well,
for the next race.
Anderson Promotions, I can tell you this, they're pretty good at, you know, doing tech and all that. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next couple of weeks. We're going to find out. Obviously, the triple header at Mid-Ohio is this week. If you're listening after Thursday, it just happened. So we'll have results for you next week on Inside Open Wheel.
Before we leave this story, I just want to make the point that I think I mentioned to you before when we were talking about this story, is that the regulations for parts on these spec series cars is extremely tight.
Yep.
When I was racing in Pro Mazda back in 06 and 07, I remember a car that finished on the podium was disqualified because the side pod support bracket was not the specific kind required. So it could be anything, you know, it could be anything from something really bad to something as small as that. I mean, if they're fined a large sum of money, that can give you some clues, but, you know, these technical specs are very, very tight.
And it could even be something as much as they went to the minimum, like say, for example, they went to the minimum ride requirements, and they all the cars may have, you know, scraped off a spec part or whittled it down to where it was deemed, quote, too small. And there's no fine line like there is in like an IndyCar series with, you know, like motors or whatever, or, you know, IMSA, where you have, you know, four or five different chassis manufacturers in the prototype class.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, I don't think we're going to find out, but if we do, we'll let you know here on Inside Open Wheel. But I will say this, F4's loss is definitely USF 2000's gain. Of course, it could also be a problem with the lack thereof of racing. The past couple weekends, the F4 races have had, I think, a total of maybe seven laps out of five different races under green flag, because they would go under green, they'd go green, maybe run a lap, yellow. Go green, run a lap, yellow. So it's going to be interesting if race director Scott Goodyear has a discussion, a little come to Jesus meeting with the F4 drivers, because there's some talk in the paddock of that as well, where a lot of these drivers, you know, they're paying good sums of money to come in, you know, get recognized, maybe move up to FR Americas, you know, maybe make that move to USF 2000 next year, but they're having a hard time doing it because they're not even getting their racing in.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
go ahead. Sorry,
I remember last year in the F1600 series, the kids that are running up front, they got into each other quite a bit throughout the season, and I remember at when we went to VIR, like in the middle of the season, they had a driver's meeting with the stewards, and they said any contact between two cars, even just bumping wheels, you're going to be disqualified. Like, that's it. Like, hard line, no. You know, we're not going to look at it. We're not going to get both sides. We're just if you touch, you're done.
Right.
And it cleans things up right away. So this kind of stuff can be fixed. They just have to have a hard discussion with the drivers and set some firm boundaries.
And Scott Goodyear's been on both sides of the equation when it comes to, you know, hard-nosed racing. So I would be extremely shocked, even if he pulled in the FR Americas drivers, you know, had like one huge meeting and said, guys, we've got to stop this. You know, if you cause a crash, you know, we find that it was errant on your end, you're going to be parked for the weekend. And I think that something like that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. I would trust Scott Goodyear to do something like that, but we'll see what happens. We're going to follow up on this and bring you more information once it becomes available. All right, coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, Charlie and I break down Mid-Ohio for the Road to Indy Series and Barber Motorsports Park for FR Americas. Coming up next.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Now, don't forget also that we are on Apple Podcasts, so anywhere you get your favorite podcast, you can catch Inside Open Wheel. Make sure you set a push notification when the new episode drops. I promise you this one will be next Monday because we had some technical difficulties trying to get Michael Shank on. Next week, we will preview the IndyCar version of Mid-Ohio, the Mid-Ohio doubleheaders. But right now, Charlie and I are going to talk about the latest news out of IndyCar. So Portland canceled. WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca, which doesn't roll off the tongue like Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca, which Laguna Seca, we all know, rolls off the tongue. But we got to be, you know.
I have a whole rant about naming rights for racetracks that I don't think we have time for. But
we don't, please, because I don't want to get a text from Cooper McNeil saying, dude, WTF. Come on, man. All right, so
I'll save it for another day.
Yeah, we'll save it for another segment that we have 15 minutes for. Okay, so because we've canceled essentially three races, because I believe Laguna was supposed to be a doubleheader, correct? That sounds right.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So three racetracks have picked up another race: Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course, Gateway. Trying to think, it's Worldwide Technology Raceway. That's what it is. And the Harvest
You're
GP.
You're tempting me with my rant.
I'm trying not to, trust me. And Harvest GP gets another race. Mainly because there's going to be, I doubt there's going to be a 8 hours in the United States for SRO, but that's another rant for another day. It's going to be, first of all, I feel bad for the teams because all of a sudden they were dropped on. I mean, you could say they were dropped on at the last minute that they were going to do a doubleheader at Mid-Ohio. But at the same time, unless you're the 9 car, you're pretty much screwed because you have to get ready for now 2 races at Mid-Ohio.
Well, I mean, if you haven't figured out now that everything is tentative, I mean, we were saying that months ago.
Right.
So the schedule is always subject to change. So you really have to be prepared for that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how much Scott Dixon laps the field for both races. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I already say Scott Dixon's going to win the Mid-Ohio? That's his playground. Come on. But in all seriousness, it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. I mean, I'm happy that we're finally realized that maybe we should stay within a 400 or 500 mile centralized bubble per se. But at the same time, how do I say this without dropping the C word once again? It's just good that we're not going to places, we're not going to too many places and possibly infecting a whole bunch of crew members. But I'm going to end on that. I think the doubleheaders are great. As we heard from Mike Shank earlier today, it's great having a compacted schedule, yes, but it's harder on the crew members. The good thing is, after Worldwide Technology Raceway, between then and the Harvest GP, there's a month off for these crews, so they can take a week or two, kick their feet up, or do whatever. And then there's also a nice little gap between the Harvest GP, because I think that's the beginning of October, and the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg at the end of September. Or October.
What's the Harvest GP?
Harvest GP. Okay.
What is that?
That's the road course race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Okay. You know, all this talk about keeping it within a 300, 400 mile bubble makes me think that this is a prime opportunity to bring back Cleveland.
Oh, I agree. I totally agree. I've been saying bring back Cleveland for years. Granted, not to the effect that Robin Miller did to make do a doubleheader where one race was an oval at Cleveland and the other was the proper road course, but that's
kind of cool.
But you got to stop and figure. Turn one, think of how tight that is. You had a lot of people decide to dive bomb in the turn one. They're on the starts.
Yeah, but that's going to happen anyways.
Well, yeah, but it's even worse at, Cleveland, because people think, oh, it just narrows down. Not really. But, no, I'd love to see Cleveland come back, but I'm wondering if there's something in the contract with Green Savory that says, no, it's too close to Mid-Ohio. Kind of like any race here at Chicagoland Speedway, there must be a certain agreement with Road America, because I think that's what was holding up Road America for all those years, is there was an agreement with Andretti Promotions at the Milwaukee Mile. Stuff like that. Mm. So, same reason why there's an agreement that why we're not racing at Michigan is because there's an agreement with Detroit. No, I doubt that's the case, because I'm sure at that point with Roger Penske, Roger gets what Roger wants.
Mm-hmm. He still owns that place?
No, I think that's still under NASCAR control, but I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to buy that back too.
Yeah.
So we have what? One, two, I'm counting Indy as two different tracks. So one, two, three, four, about five tracks in I think like 9 races left to go, 5 tracks, 9 races. So, it's going to be pretty interesting. Also, I want to talk about the rumors of Iowa Speedway. This just came off the top of my head. I hope Roger Penske buys that track. That is a fun little track.
Mm-hmm.
It was a surprise to me that they were having, that we found out they're having money issues for the longest time, I guess, different owners. Rusty Wallace is no longer part of the equation, so hopefully they can get stuff straightened back out.
The old saying, if you build it, they will come. Not really the greatest business model.
Well, you know, and also what didn't help, to be honest with you, is a lot of those races turned into daytime races. I can tell you this. Holy cow, it is hot in that Iowa sun when you're up against aluminum bleachers.
I bet.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and talk about the upcoming races this weekend or this week. Wednesday, July 29th, practice qualifying and races for USF 2000 and Indy Pro 2000 at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. Thursday at 8 a.m. Eastern, second qualifying starts for USF 2000 Indy Pro. Racing starts at 11:30 for USF 2000 Indy Pro, then again at 3:15. Both of those days are going to be on the Road to Indy app. Rob Howden will have the call on that. For the FR America's F4 Championship, I'm actually pulling that schedule up now. They're actually going to be with Radical Cup. So here's what we have for the full event schedule. And there will be fans allowed actually at Barber Motorsports Park. So practice begins at 9:15 for F4, 10:35 for FR America's. Friday's just a huge practice day for them. They also have standing start practice. Saturday, race one begins at 9:20 for F4. FR America's at 12:25. All these times central. F4 gets another race at around 1:45. Then on Sunday, 9:25, the third F4 race. FR America's gets a third race as well, 11:30. And F4 gets four races this weekend. 1 o'clock start for them. Also, I believe that is because Formula Race Promotions was supposed to be there, but they have pulled out. They're going to be at Road Atlanta with Radical Cup. You haven't raced at Barber yet, have you?
I did, actually. I raced there in the Skip Barber Regional Series back in 2004.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Barber Motorsports Park.
Okay. I mean, it's really tight. It was designed for motorcycles, not for cars. So it's tight. There's a lot of up and down. That's off the top of my head.
Yeah, you know, it's probably been so long, and
I've done more laps on it on iRacing than in real life for sure. But it's a cool place. I was excited to go back there this year, in the F1600 car, and disappointed that I'm not going to be able to. But hopefully next year.
Yeah, Eric Brennan, I believe Craig Minervini is going to be on the call. I'm not sure if Craig's going to be there. I know he may have some conflict with Marlins. He's not going to have conflict with that. So Craig Minervini and Eric Brennan will be on the call for the races this weekend. Ooh, that was close. Yeah.
Also worth mentioning that they have an absolutely awesome museum. It's like I said, it's mostly motorcycles, but they do have a fairly large collection of sort of late 80s, early 90s Lotus F1 cars, which is kind of a strange because Lotus really wasn't very good at that time. Cars are gorgeous.
I was going to say, I thought I heard Forrest Barber had a collection of just Lotus race cars to go along with his motorcycles.
Yep.
I heard that, and it's like, that does sound interesting.
But not the famous ones, just like the crappy ones.
Okay, so we're not talking about anything from Senna or anything like that.
No, those are all in the Donington collection.
Oh man, I need to go to all these cool places once we get the chance to open up. I really want to go. So I've got to say this: I find midweek races intriguing. I know why we don't do them, but every once in a while, I think it'll be pretty cool just to, you know, shake it up. Do a late night Wednesday race like Iowa or someplace that has lights just to mix things up a little bit in the summertime.
Did you say night race or weekday race?
Weekday night racing.
Weekday night race. Isn't NASCAR experimenting with that right now?
Well, they have to compress their championship. At least IndyCar has enough weekends where they can get away with, you know, doing what they do.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting. I mean, for me, personally, I think one of my favorite things about racing in general is sort of the buildup over the course of a weekend.
Yeah.
Like Friday, you have practice. It's fairly casual and relaxed. Saturday, it's, you know, qualifying. So things are a little bit more tense. And then Sunday is the race and it's the big explosion at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I think ovals, the format is a bit different. and you have a little bit more flexibility with that. So I can see an oval race working, like have, you know, practice in the morning, qualifying mid afternoon, and then race at night. I can see that working.
Oh, but,
you know, I like to keep the road and street course schedules traditional.
No, I don't disagree. Oh, and I would be remiss if we didn't mention Jimmy Johnson tested an Indy car at the road course at Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Ooh, I heard that he was going to do it, but I didn't hear that it actually happened. How did it go?
You know, from all reports I'm seeing, it actually went pretty well. He, you know, obviously picked up speed throughout the day. I'm looking at a picture right now from Chip Ganassi Racing, and it looks like that either Chip or Scott Dixon may have gotten, well, it wasn't Scott Dixon because it's not Taco Bell, but I think Chip Ganassi got some Mexican food for them. So it's a good thing that Scott Dixon's been limited to not going to the Taco Bell on 16th Street and Speedway.
I don't know if getting one of your driver's Mexican food on a test day is really the best idea.
Hey, how else are you going to make him go fast?
I don't know. Is that like some like secret NOS system they have?
It might be. That's maybe where they get the twin turbos from.
All right. That feels like a very Chip Ganassi thing to do.
Oh, it does. Well, on that bombshell, it's time to end. Next week, we will wrap up the midweek Road to Indy races. We'll preview Road to Indy. We'll also have an update for you on what's going on with IndyCar at Mid-Ohio, F4 FRA wrap-up, and all sorts of surprises. Charlie, let's see what we can do this weekend. Hopefully, we can... hopefully, it'll be a good weekend for racing. I think these next 4 or 5 days, if you're an open-wheel enthusiast, it's going to be a great time for you to sit down and get some racing in you.
Yeah, I know I definitely will be.
Yep, I know I will be. Inside Open Wheels, a production of Trackout Multimedia Studios. I'm Jeremy Scott. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you guys next week. Take care.